We get the hour underway by welcoming back to the program an award-winning actor. You know him for his roles as Toby Ziegler on The West Wing, as Dr. Aaron Glassman in The Good Doctor on ABC, which is airing new episodes from season 5 starting earlier this week. We're happy to be joined on the telephone line by our friend Richard Schiff. Well, Richard, let's talk about the track that's gone on here with your character, Dr. Glassman, in season 5 of The Good Doctor. Your ex-wife got involved. You helped out. A lot of things going on here. A lot of questions that need to be answered.
Okay. Well, go ahead. Question away. see what I can remember.
Okay. Well, first of all, what about Sean and Leah? Are they going to make it work?
I think that's the question that everyone will be asking who's watching. My guess is no. No, I'm kidding. I don't know. I mean, I haven't read future scripts yet. I think we're a little ahead of the audience because there was a little break in the episodes that were airing. And I don't quite know where you guys are. I think Glassman certainly thinks that they're going to work out because I think he's taken a liking to Leah, although it took a little bit of time, or Paige, I mean, or Leah. No, it's Paige. Wait, what's your name on the show? I always
Leah on the show.
Leah. I always call her Paige on the set and Leah off the set. But anyway, she seems capable of handling Sean, and I think it's what's moving Glassman out of the role of, you know, a primary caretaker, mentor, and so on. I think that's going to become Leah soon, if it all works out, and who knows if it will.
Are you still shooting season 5?
Yeah, I'm going back. Yeah, I'm not in Vancouver at the moment because of my wife's surgery, nothing to worry about, just a knee issue. And I'm going back to Vancouver, and then we're going to pick it up. So we shoot until the end of April or so, somewhere around then.
What is it, Richard, that you've found in this character that makes it interesting and challenging for you as an actor?
Well, it's always challenging to find something that's challenging. sometimes, you know. I think he's a bit confused about what he wants in life based on the writing this year. You know, I mean, he's taken off to Montana to find paradise, literally, the town of paradise. And I think he felt that Sean could take care of himself and then found out that wasn't quite true. And he came back because Sean was flipping out a little bit. And so you got next thing you know, he's in surgery. So You have to figure out how to justify all these different things, you know, because in your mind, if you're as an actor, you're thinking, oh, okay, he's retiring, he's moving to Montana. There must be something darker and deeper going on in there that's causing this to happen and then to come back so quickly and make it work in the hospital. It's odd. And so you have to find a way to justify all that. And then... Moment to moment, I'm always looking for ways to make things more interesting and to, you know, challenge us as actors to find moments. You know, moments is what strings a story together. A story is, you know, a long line of moments, like chain link fence. You know, and you want to keep finding what is interesting in each moment. Why the scene exists. What could, you know. If the scene doesn't need to be there, is the scene really necessary? Is it urgent? Is it important? And you have to justify all those things. So it's a challenge, you know. Shakespeare wrote it out all for you, you know what I mean? and in television often, especially in episodics? I forget what they call them. The ones where each show is kind of a one-off, like Law and Order. They don't necessarily spend all the time in the world developing, you know, justification for actors. You know, I've been watching 1883, that show.
Oh, yeah.
Phenomenal, phenomenal. But look at the time they give for each moment. And it's a whole another kind of storytelling. It's an epic story of, you know, and those actors are given wonderful opportunities to really delve into everything that happens to them. And here it's really about moving the story along. Things happen very quickly, and plots need to come to a conclusion at the end of the hour, you know? So that's the challenge. The challenge is to make all of that justified and to make it as interesting as you possibly can. Wow, that was a long-winded answer.
No, it was great. Now, you've been fortunate enough. Not every actor gets the opportunity to be part of two very successful and long-running series, and that's certainly great and provides job security, but can it be a little confining at times?
A little what in times?
Confining.
Oh, sure, of course. I felt that way about the West Wing. You know, I mean, after a while, you really want to bust out. And you want, you know, after the West Wing, I went and did plays for 6 or 7 years. I went to the West End and Broadway and, you know, wanted to, you know, expand. There's a limit to how much you can expand within one character. It's the reason why I think the storyline for Toby on the West Wing got very strange towards the end, because they just like were coming up with ideas and they'll go, yeah, let's do that. And of course, some of those ideas make no sense after the 6 years of building the character, you know, with integrity that you've done. And it's not their fault, but it's like, you know, we got to do something. We got to do something new. We got to do something interesting. And that's, TV can be very confining after a while. You feel the need to kind of bust out of the seams and try other stuff. The people, though, at The Good Doctor are really nice. You know, when other jobs come along, I get to go off and do that. And the producers listen to me as much as they, you know, are capable of or can stand. And so I have a lot of effect on, you know, on the way scenes happen. You know, I can change a few things here and there, and to keep it challenging for myself. So they're very nice here.
We're talking with Richard Schiff here on Downtown. Well, we're all a bit preoccupied with what's going on over in Europe. The situation with Ukraine is just, it's horrifying. It seems to get worse with each passing day. And I don't know, I often feel powerless looking at it. And I'm not sure what our response should be as a nation.
Powerless is a good word. And I feel powerless quite often. In the last 5 or 6 years, powerless is a really good word. Of course, we can't give in to that, and we have to find ways to make a difference. Martin Sheen once said to me that with all the activism that he does, with all the times that he's been arrested, for all the work that he's been doing for 40 years for, you know, justice and peace and disarmament and all of those issues, he said to me, you know, the first time he got arrested, he realized it was about his, you know, that was his life's purpose. And then he goes, I don't think I'll make a difference. He goes, that's not the point. The point is, it's you're compelled to do something. You're compelled to do something to make to help towards the attempt to make the world a better place. You know, it's what those West Wing characters were so beloved, I think, is because every one of them were purposed to make the world a better place than how they found it. And we all have to make that effort. But powerless is the word, you know, because you look at the utter stupidity of geopolitics and the way the world functions, you know. It's remarkable. And, you know, if you're in New York City and you watch 99.999% of people stop at the red light at the corner and follow the rules of society. And, you know, I drove a cab in New York. 99.9% of people were amazing. You know, some of them didn't say anything. Some of them were kind. Some of them were generous. Some of them are beautiful in their soul, but only that 1.1% of people were out to do damage to other people. And you just wonder what's the motive? What's the you know, what's the purpose? Why are you doing that? Is it a psychopathic kind of uncontrollable thing? And the same thing goes with geopolitics. It's like most of the world, you know, seems to be able to get along, albeit with some great disparity in wealth and poverty. That's a whole other thing. But for the most part, day to day, we get along, and then somebody comes along and wants to disrupt everything, and it makes no sense. It makes sense when you analyze it, you know, geopolitically. Yeah, of course, he's an oil man. Oil is what's made him the most powerful man in the world. I'm talking about Putin. The oil pipelines, Afghanistan, Crimea, you know, Ukraine, all make sense if you want to play three-dimensional chess with the devil. You know, that's what he's doing, right? Oil is going to make the difference in whether he survives or not. It's 60% of the GDP in Russia. Right, and then he comes from the KGB, and he comes from the old days, and he's nostalgic, and he wants the satellites back, and blah blah blah, and you know, who gives a, you know what I mean? He's powerless because everyone's nuclear armed, right? So you can't just send troops, and who wants to send troops? And you know, you see that long supply line, that long convoy, 40 miles long, heading towards Kiev. And you know, I, who am a nonviolent person who will demonstrate against any war, imagine some U.S. planes just going there and strafing it, you know, and just debilitating that convoy. And, you know, and in real war, that convoy wouldn't survive. You know, wouldn't survive airstrikes. So, you know, powerless is the word. The Ukrainian people seem to be, you know, so lovely and so strong-willed and so full of heart and soul. And, you know, certainly at this point in time, and Zelensky is the definition of heroic. But and you look at it from the other side, and this is where it gets controversial and this is where it gets complicated. You know, we are up in arms about Russia invading a sovereign country, independent country, and yet you look at the history of all Western nations, of Britain and the United States, and right. You know, the horror of bombing citizens is horrific, of course, and it should never happen. And yet we carpet bombed Baghdad twice in 10 years, to the tune of hundreds of thousands of civilian death. So the hypocrisy is very apparent to me. But all that aside, if we just sweep that away for the moment, you'd love to be able to go and help the Ukrainian people and to stave off another just heinous political act by a dictator and by someone who literally has no concern for humanity and for whether people live or die.
No, and for those of us old enough to grow up doing duck and cover drills and being used to having that in the back of your mind at all times, there's that. And then there's the humanitarian crisis of so far over 1 million refugees.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I grew up, I was born in 55. I don't know how old you are, but
I was born in 58. So.
58. So I was born into a whole lot of literature and a whole lot of movies, TV shows about World War II. And of course, relatives who didn't survive and relatives who did. And I grew up wondering how it's possible. How did that happen? You know, you grew up in the 60s in New York, and there's a lot of, you know, there's crime and there's political activism and there's civil rights movements and riots and there's all kinds of stuff going on and anti-war movements and blah, blah, blah. But I still, compared to that, World War II seemed just way out of the realm of possibility, the Holocaust and, you know, 20 million Russians being killed and you know, hundreds of thousands of Americans and 6 million Jews and millions of others just eliminated. And I never quite understood how human beings can get to the point where they allow that to happen, much less one or two of the people who caused it, you know, or you know, 1 or 2 million, thousands, I don't know. And then I watched 2016, and then I watched the presidency in the United States, and I go, oh, it can happen anywhere.
Right.
And then you, but it's not the Trump that is the phenomenon. You know, there's always one. It's all the people that follow, defend, reverse ideology, or eliminate ideology, in order to make that happen. And that's the phenomenon I don't understand. I don't understand the Lindsey Grahams, and I don't understand, you know, the people that all of a sudden can defend, can alter the truth, embrace alternative facts, embrace all of the tactics of Goebbels and Hitler in the 1930s, Stalin before him, Putin after him. It's mind-boggling, you know. And then you look, and it's all connected. Putin and, you know, Manafort, the campaign
right.
for Trump, was the guy who was holding the Ukrainian dictator puppet, Putin's puppet in Ukraine. He was the one, you know, and then he becomes the campaign manager for Trump. It's like, holy cow. And who's the first Secretary of State for Trump? I forget his name now. He was the oil man, the Exxon oil man.
Oh, yeah, Rex Tillerson.
Rex Tillerson was the Exxon oil man when, sorry, I'm getting a call there. Anyway, I mean, I was in Moscow for the trial of Mikhail Khodorkovsky, who was the oil man who was arrested by Putin in Siberia. And I got involved in his story and got to know his son. And it was fascinating because the number one dissident in Russia was an oil man. And he had was running the company Yukos. He's an oligarch, but he started to lean towards the West a little bit and wanted to make a deal with either Mobil or Exxon to pursue the northern territories for oil, for the oil reserves there, and needed Western technology. Well, long story short, but Putin had him arrested, put him in jail, and his henchman, Igor Sechin, ended up taking over Yukos, combined it with Gasneft, I think that's the name, Gazprom, and that became the biggest oil company in the world, or one of them. And they combined with, I think, Exxon and BP drilled in the northern territories with that technology and became the number two producer of oil in the world. Blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm very aware of the Putin geoeconomic, you know, strategy from years ago, having been in Russia and having read so much about it. And this is predictable. And, you know, and why did he support Trump, and why did he help Trump win and sabotage Hillary Clinton? Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State when the first set of sanctions was implemented after Crimea, right? So he had revenge against Hillary. Also, alternative energy. This is the thing that's so stupid, and you feel powerless. Alternative energy is the way to get away from being controlled by Putin. If Putin just turns the faucet, Germany has no power. But half of Europe has no power. He holds that over Europe, you know, perpetually, until you get to alternative fuel. And, of course, the GOP here wants to use this as an excuse to build up production of oil in America instead of moving towards alternative energy. I don't understand. I just don't understand so much. And the older I get, the less I get it. And I do feel powerless. But I can't give into it.
We're talking with Richard Schiff on Downtown. Well, we'll know we're near as important, certainly, but equally frustrating. We've talked last time you were on with us. We talked about your love of baseball and shared stories of you growing up a Yankee fan. Well, I was a Red Sox fan at the same time. But here we are.
No wonder we don't like each other.
Well, here we are when we need something to distract us and they can't figure it out. They can't get it together. I don't know. I blame the owners and a bad commissioner more than anything else.
Yeah, you know, it's so stupid. There's so much money to be had, and they, you know, just the more apparently the more money there is, the harder it is to divvy it up, to compromise. I don't really understand it, and I haven't even been following it except for a couple of articles. I follow Mark Feinsand, who's a friend of mine, so I love it when his articles come up on MLB.com, but. It's too frustrating, you know. It's like being a Knicks fan and watching the Knicks. You can't figure that out either. You know, you can watch it and watch it and watch it. They're up by 16 every game, it seems, in the first half, and then they lose by 20. And, you know, things just don't make sense anymore. I just don't get it. The only thing that makes sense to me is how much I love my family and how much I love my wife. And you can do one thing at a time and, you know, just focus on that at least to start the day. But baseball, you know, they're going to blow it. You know, what else is new?
Exactly. Well, Richard, it's always good to talk with you. We appreciate you making time for us today. As always, give Sheila our best. We hope she has a speedy recovery. We look forward to the rest of Season 5 of The Good Doctor and hope you'll come back and join us again down the road.
Thanks, Rich. It's so nice to talk to you again, and you guys have a great day. Keep the peace.